You may be seated. Our New Testament reading is from Psalm 87. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. He has founded his city on the holy mountain. The Lord loves the gates of Zion more than all the other dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are said of you, city of God. I will record Rahab and Babylon among those who acknowledge me, Philistia too, and Tyre, along with Cush, and will say, this one was born to Zion. Indeed, of Zion it will be said, this one and that one were born in her, and the Most High himself will establish her. The Lord will write in the register of the peoples, this one was born in Zion. As they make the music, they will sing, all my fountains are in you. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament passage today is Luke chapter 12, verses 34 through 36. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. I got that wrong. It's supposed to be 32 through 34, if you're following along. Don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great joy to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to those in need. This will store up treasure for you in heaven, and the purses of heaven will never get old or develop holes. Your treasure will be safe. No thief can steal it, and no moth can destroy it. For wherever your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is the word of the Lord. So when I was a junior in college, I decided to take the year off of taking classes and teach them instead, and traveled to Honduras to Tegucigalpa, where I spent the year teaching 5th and 6th grade. The incredible qualifications of just being a human being. It gave me, one, incredible respect for those of you who are educators and teachers, especially of elementary school kids. I think I was 21 years old at the time, and a very energetic young man, and I remember every day by 3 p.m. needing a nap. It was tough. Like, wow. Man, kids are just, they're wonderful. They're little energy suckers. But it was actually a great experience. I loved being able to invest in those kids' lives for that year, showing up every day and seeing their mostly smiling faces and helping them learn their times tables and all this other stuff that was just fascinating to be a part of. But part of that was being in Tegucigalpa for a year. And the longer it went, the more I actually started missing home. And I mean, I loved it there. I got a chance to travel to all the other countries in Central America, loved exploring. But by the end of that, I really, really started missing home. And I remember counting down the days until I got to get on that plane. I mean, you rehearse it in your mind in advance, right? I'd drive by the airport on my way to school every day and be like, it's only 37 more days till I get to go get on a plane and go home. Next day, it's only 36 more days. Wow, it's a long time till it's going to be 35. I remember it taking forever to finally get to the point where I was on that plane. And then I remember being terrified that, like, the flight would be canceled and I'd have to wait a whole nother day. It was one flight a day. And when we finally landed in Houston, Texas, and I walked through customs, and the guy stamps my passport and says, welcome home, Mr. Weisong, I just about knelt down on the ground and kissed the floor, except it was an airport and it was really dirty, so I managed to avoid it. But being home felt so good to be back. I could drive again. I hadn't driven a car for almost a year. I could go to Taco Bell. It's the little things. Home is this place that means so much to it. It's the place where we feel comfortable, where we belong, where we know, and where we are known. And home is at the core of our human experience, and it is the core of our spiritual experience. I think there may be nothing more important than building home, a place where you belong, where you are accepted. It is something we do with each other, right? Home is a place that we help construct together, whether it's your family or our church family. Home is this thing that we make and build and invest ourselves in. We had this little cross-stitched, I remember this little cross-stitched, you remember those old things? That was a thing for a while, decorated. The entire time growing up, we had this, my mom had this hanging on the wall that said, home is where your heart is. You remember, probably had something similar, an easy thing to cross-stitch, and there it is on your wall. Home is where the heart is. And I remember seeing that like, no matter where you travel, and I love traveling, it's so good to go, and it's always so good to come home, to that place where you are at rest and where you belong. Home is where your heart is. I love Jesus's take on this that I just read in Luke chapter 12, and apparently pulled it out and lost my place. Give me a second. Jesus says to his disciples, to us, don't be afraid. Your Father's given you the kingdom, all of this. So sell what you have and give to those who need it, which does what? This creates home, right? To take care of each other, to take from what is ours and give it to the people around us is precisely what creates a belonging for everyone, care and concern for everyone. He says, in doing so, you will store up for yourselves treasure that cannot be destroyed. Things that cannot be lost. They won't grow old. Your purses won't develop holes. Your gold won't fall out. Your stock market account won't crash. Your bonds won't go, the company won't go bankrupt. You're going to be fine when you live your life in such a way that is creating a place of belonging for the people around you. And he says it. Where your treasure is, your heart will be also, right? What's the place where your heart is?
Home.
I think this is a passage about the kind of world we create, the kind of home we create. That sacred space where we belong, where we invest ourselves, right? Your treasure is where you've invested, what you're putting the things that matter in your life into, your energy, your resources. What kind of home are you creating? Because that is precisely, of course, where your heart is going to be. This is very much about real treasure, right? And we all get duped into thinking, I mean, I don't even have any cash on me. If I pull that $100 bill, imagine Ben Franklin here, what is that? It is a piece of paper, right? Some green ink. Well, they've gotten really creative with it. That's all it is. When I come to my deathbed, will Uncle Ben care about me at all?
No.
Will it matter how many Uncle Bens I have? Not even little. What is of actual value? Like, we are foolish when we live our lives thinking that money or gold or whatever these things are the things of actual real worth in our lives. They are not. What is of ultimate value and what Jesus is pointing us towards here is that these relationships and communities and connections, this love and concern and care that we develop with one another are the things of ultimate value in our lives. Those are the eternal things and the things that really matter. And how we invest ourselves in creating and shaping these places matters so profoundly and immensely. I think this is one of the most important things we do here in church, right? This is a place, I love that we sing family every day because this is an extended family, a place where you are loved, where you are cared for. And in a family, I love that. Are you valued because of what you contribute? No. You're valued because you're part of the family. You are part. There's nothing you can do that makes you not part of the family. You contribute to the family because, of course, you are part of the family. Not the other way around. You're not like, oh, you contribute, so you're part of the family. No, it's you're part of the family comes first, and that is what leads you to offer who you are to the rest of the people with you. We are creating a place of belonging here. It is what we are doing. Incidentally, science is kind of catching up with this and revealing the deep truth of it. Harvard has done a study. It's the longest running scientific study going. It's about 85 years old now, where they took a group of Harvard freshmen and they also took a group of townies. They found some poor boys from the tenements and followed them, and they've been following them for the last 80 years. Like what, all sorts of aspects, their health, their jobs, their careers, their marriages, and as they've gotten towards the end of their lives, they started to do some really interesting study on what is making them actually fulfilled and happy. And the men who reported happiness and satisfaction with their lives, it inherently comes back to the depth and connectedness they feel in the relationships with the people around them. If we feel like we are deeply known and that we are known, that we are connected and people care for us and we care for other people, we find joy and happiness and meaning in our lives. If we don't have that, it doesn't matter what else you do. Happiness does not track wealth. It did not track importance. It did not track how successful they were in their careers. It tracked how connected they were with their families, with their friends, and their community. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And we live wise lives when we invest in the relationships and the people around us. This is building home, family, church. This may be one of our highest callings, I think, as a church, is to be a place where people can belong, where they're home, where they're family. I love, and I think you can be so proud of the United Church of Christ, that this is a core to their values and what they have, their wisdom and how they see church and how they structure it. A lot of churches believe that the foundation of community and faith is doctrine and a specific confession of faith. It's the idea, and it's intoxicating on the surface, that if we all just saw things the same way, if we all agreed, we'd have a great community, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to think I'm right. That's the only catch there, is that we'll all get along great as long as you all think like me. there's some profound, and I love this, is marriage, this other wonderful relationship, based on you agreeing? Your marriage. Are you married because you agree with the other person?
No.
Husbands, wives?
No.
Loud in the back?
No.
No, you are not married because you agree with your spouse, right? Why are you married? Because you're sticking with each other. You're sticking with that idiot.
Yeah.
Even if he's being an idiot.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Sticking with her even if she's making... Do you really need another Precious Moments figurine, dear? No. Marriage is a marriage, not because you even have a certificate, right? Marriage is a marriage because you have committed to being with each other, because you're sticking by each other's side. The UCC sees covenant, this precise thing that makes a marriage, as the basis for our church community, that we are committing to stick with each other. This is so beautiful. Like, we're a family because we've decided to do life together, because we've decided to stick with each other and care for each other, show up for each other. This is so much stronger and more profound, because then you might think I'm crazy, and I probably am in ways, but that's fine. We can still be part of this family, right? You might have some crazy political ideas. That's fine. We can still be part of the same family. The basis of our connectedness is our covenant, our commitment, just like a marriage, to show up and stick with each other. This is what we are doing here. I love the idea of sacred space, of space that we intentionally set aside as being a little bit different. That this space here is this sacred space, and what makes this space sacred is that this is a place where everyone is welcome, where everyone belongs, where there is a place at the table, spot in the pew. We've got a bunch. Let's fill them. This is a place where everyone is valued and respected and loved. And that's what makes this sacred and holy. 1 Peter uses this metaphor that I think is profound and beautiful. And of course, in the Hebrew context, the center of religion was temple, right? It was God's presence on earth. Everything revolved around temple. And with Jesus, we see this recast and reimagined. Listen to what Peter sees as temple here. You who are coming to Christ, who is the living cornerstone of God's temple, he was rejected by people, but he was chosen by God for great honor. And you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple. What's the temple? Us. Us, right? We are what makes this space sacred and holy. That God's intention is for all of us in our unique shape, quirk, personalities, perspectives, gifts, weaknesses. That we are each stones that God is fitting together to make this space sacred and holy. That God's presence dwelling here among us is a beautiful thing that we are each invited into. Each invited into contributing to, making, shaping. It is, of course, shaped by the shape of us. I love, love, love that psalm. I mean, that version makes it kind of inaccessible, that 87. Let me read it to you from mine, because this is an idea that it's a little bit different from what we expect. Purist Jews would see that Zion, of course, who got to go into the temple, by the way? Just men, not just only men. Jewish men. There was, Gentiles had to stay further. Women could go this far. Men could go that far. Jewish men could come further. And then only priests could go into the temple itself. This re-envisions that entirely, right? All of you coming in are the space itself. And this Psalm 87 is this incredible invitation. Again, before I go, if you're going to take a bird's eye view of Jewish history, and the Jews are the good guys, who are the bad guys?
Gentiles.
But specific bad guy. Who did the worst thing? I mean, before Adolf Hitler, ancient Jewish history, who did the worst things to the Jews, to the Israels? But specifically, which other nations? Egypt enslaved them and hauled them off. Who else? Remember David and Goliath?
Romans.
Who's Goliath? A Philistine. After that time, they get hauled off in captivity again to where? Babylon. We're bad guys. The Aramaeans, horrible, enslaved. And let me read Psalm 87 now again with that in mind. On the holy mountain stands the city founded by the Lord. He loves Jerusalem more than any other city in Israel. O city of God, what glorious things are said of you. I will count Egypt and Babylon among those who know me. And Philistia and Tyre and even distant Ethiopia, they have all become citizens of Jerusalem. Regarding Jerusalem, it will be said, everyone enjoys the rights of citizenship there. The Most High will personally bless this city. When the Lord registers the nations, he will say, they have all become citizens of Jerusalem. The people will play flutes and sing, the source of my life springs from Zion. Did you catch that? Who gets to belong?
Everybody.
The worst of them get to belong in God's home. This place God is creating, this place you and I are invited to be co-creators of God with, is precisely God's vision for this, is a place where everybody belongs, where everyone gets to be a citizen. It will be said of no matter where you were actually born, you are a child of God. You belong here. You were born here. Let that sink into you for just a minute. You don't have to earn that. You belong here. God sees you as inherently part of his house. This is such a wonderful, beautiful thing. I moved away from home for the first time in college. We lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I got in my 1986 Nissan 300Z and drove 1,800 miles to Walla Walla College in Walla Walla, Washington. It was a long way from home, and man, you kind of take for granted how much home matters, right? Like, just being able to do your laundry right there, having a fridge that mom stocks with groceries every week. All of a sudden, all of these things that make home home are gone, and you're trying to cope with a new environment and new challenges and new space without home. And I remember it being an incredibly, actually emotionally difficult, like it was tough. One of the harder things I've done was leave home. But my cousin Jeff was in my class as well. He and I are still great friends. And his mom and his family lived about an hour away from Walla Walla. And I remember about once a month, we would go back to his house on the weekend. And we would go and drop our laundry in the laundry room. And Aunt Carol would say, "Come on in, boys. Here is supper." And there would be a feast. Man, my Aunt Carol can cook. And we could sit down on the couch. And it felt so good to have home. This space that was open, where you were welcome, where you belong, where they care about you, where they're going to take care of you. This is what we're doing here, y'all. That's the point, is that this gets to be a place where we offer and open up home to the community around us. There's no better gift we could give than a place where people can come and belong, to be known, to be cared for. It's what matters most when we come to the end of our lives, is both the places where we have been allowed to belong and the places where we have opened up and created places for other people to belong. So may we do as Jesus said and invest ourselves, our treasure, in the things that matter most. May we pour our heart into creating beautiful, sacred space where each person is welcome and belongs. Today, we get to do a really cool thing and expand our church, our local church family. So this involves, of course, some of us. I